Hey everyone, welcome back to the Fowler Hour. Today I'm joined by Austin McKenney. He first caught my attention when he joined the Logo Hunt contest that Jonathan from Logo Inspirations and I run for the last couple of years. He did some awesome logo design and rebrand entries for the contest, and since then we've been pretty good friends, chatting on and off over the last couple of years, and I wanted to get him on the podcast to talk about balancing agency life and being a freelancer and his journey, because not only does he do logos and branding, he's also working as a digital designer in his day-to-day job. So he's got loads of different skills and loads of different areas, and it was a great conversation today to kind of explore the idea of, should you really focus in on niche down on super hard on one thing, or is it really good for your creative side and your creative brain to learn and experiment with lots of different ideas and techniques? Today's show is brought to you by Skillshare. Now, if you haven't already signed up to Skillshare, don't really know what you've been doing. It's 2 free months of completely unlimited classes from thousands of experts to learn almost any skill that you're looking to. That could be in design, that could be in web design. And the show's been going for a couple of months. They've been sponsoring a part of the show for the last couple of months. That's 2 free months you could have had a Skillshare by now. So many new skills you could have learned. So don't miss out on this opportunity. Go to skl.sh/cfowlerdesign to pick up your 2 free months of Skillshare today. We're also brought to you in part by Design Cuts. Design Cuts is probably, if not the best online store for design assets, typefaces, textures, and toolkits that I've ever come across. They're constantly having amazing bundles that can potentially save you thousands of dollars overall. On typefaces alone, I've saved that. I say this almost every single week. I cannot stress enough how awesome Design Cuts have been. And also, their community support has been amazing as well. They host a forum with weekly calls, and it's not just a store. They actually want to help designers grow as well. To check out their latest bundle, head to cfowler.design or tap the link in the description, and it will take you to their latest bundle that could potentially save you thousands of dollars. Let's start the show with Austin. Hey, Austin, how are you doing, my friend?
Doing well, Connor. How are you?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. I'm going to keep saying this. I keep bouncing around from doing like 3 podcasts in a day, and I need to stop doing it. But I couldn't reschedule our one, because you have been probably the most prolific logo hunt contestant I have, or any design contest contestant I've ever seen across Instagram or anything like that. So before we dive into hearing a bit about your journey and maybe your logo hunt stuff, because again, that contest has blown up way bigger than I ever thought it would. Can you tell the people at home who you are, what you do, where you're from?
Sure. Well, my name is Austin McKenney. I'm a graphic designer. I live in Lexington, Kentucky in the United States. I've been working in some form of graphic design for probably 8 years now. I actually went to school. My major was English. So I got a degree in English, but as I got out, I discovered that I was really more drawn to the visual side of storytelling. And so I kind of started on my own, just teaching myself graphic design software at a time where a lot of resources that are available today weren't there. So I had to do it, like I had to buy books and open them up and teach myself how to do it that way. And so recently in the past few years, I've shifted more into brand identity design, web design, and UX, UI type stuff.
So you've got kind of a lot of fingers and a lot of different pies, rather than focusing in on one specific niche like logos or identity design. Do you think that because you've kind of shifted from, obviously you did your English major and you graduated in that and moved through to design, do you feel like you've got to kind of try all of these things out? Are you still like in an experimenting phase, or do you feel like you love all of the things that you try and do?
I think that for me, I'm just generally about consistently learning and improving. Right. It doesn't necessarily mean that I have to achieve mastery of all these things, but you know, like now working in an agency, it's been such a benefit, because now when I work with other, like a copywriter, for example, or maybe a web developer, I'm more in tune with their challenges and their needs. And so kind of understanding what they're up against, I'm able to design better. I'm able to design for those needs.
That's really It's super interesting because I've literally just got off the phone with Brendan Goodcuff, and he was talking about focusing in on one specific niche and going super hard into that and trying to maybe not be a master, but to kind of build up a skill in that one thing. So to hear you coming around with this idea of, well, actually when you're working as part of a bigger team, that if for that aspect, it's better that you do know a little bit of everything, even if it is just, as you say, to help people with their problems and design better for them.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, and like I said, it's really only about, you know, in some areas, it's just about achieving that sort of cursory knowledge. It doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to be an expert in everything. But I think being able to understand problems through another person's eyes, if you, especially working on a team, is very valuable. And, you know, to the other point, I definitely do advocate for, you know, you need to be a specialist in something. You definitely need to have a thing that, like, that's your thing. For me, I would say, like, bread and butter is logo and brand identity design. But that I'm still a curious person, and I like to explore these other areas. And that's what I spend my Saturdays and Sundays doing is, like, tomorrow I'm going to log on to Skillshare and learn how to do UI animation, which is just a new thing for me. So just because I want to know how it works.
That's such a nice contrast, because to be able to say, do you feel that your day job working in the agency allows you this time? Do you think if you were full-time freelancing, you'd actually sit down and, like, allot this time on a Saturday or a Sunday to sit and do this course and learn this thing? Or do you think you just focus in on, like, I've got to make money, I've got to build my business, I've got to do this, I've got to do that, and focus in super hard? Do you think that agency has given you a bit more freedom in that regard then?
I would actually say that so far my experience working in agencies, the pace is a lot more frantic. I mean, because you have a lot of clients, and a lot of those clients are, they can be very large organizations. They have a lot of needs, and those deadlines can be tight, and you can't coast with that stuff. I mean, you really have to be on your mark. And so for me, I really try to take advantage of my weekends to, you know, and my evenings as well, to learn new things and explore new areas. And a lot of the direction I go in, why I'm doing UI animation tomorrow was because I was working with a client this week where I was trying to explain to them how an animation on a website would work. And I realized, you know what, if I could just demonstrate this in a video clip, it would be so much easier than me trying to talk them through it. And so, yeah.
That comes back to the whole thing of having the cursory knowledge. Because if you spend an hour or 2 hours on Skillshare, I mean, I didn't know how to use Adobe Premiere like 2 weeks ago. And within a couple of hours, I'm putting clips together and doing enough to make a video to send to somebody. And yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. And I think particularly, again, in the agency environment, you know, you can have a guy who or a girl who is just a rock star at a certain thing, like, say, Photoshop. But if she gets swamped and buried with projects, you know, if I can get to a certain level of skill, I can take things off her plate and we can support each other in those moments, rather than everything gets thrown on her desk and, you know, she's buried.
Being a team player.
Exactly.
Being a team player in an agency world that if you're running at 100 miles an hour, you can't not be. And so you say you're working at an agency at the moment called Cornet. And Cornet, and what's your experience been like previously to that? Is it a very different environment moving from different agencies, even if it's only been for a short time? What have you noticed that has been culturally different or even just workflow?
Sure. So I would say that, so prior to joining Cornet, which I just joined like 2 weeks ago, but prior to Cornet, I was working for a local university, University of Kentucky. And working in academia, I can tell you that the pace is much slower. And in that role, I was kind of a one-man creative band. So I set the pace for the work that was done. And that was nice in some ways because I could take as much time as I needed to get something to look the way I wanted it to. But on the other side, working in an agency, what I see the most is you have the opportunity, because you're working alongside such a talented and creative team, you all will push each other to do better work. You know, when you're looking over to the next screen and, you know, your coworker is making this amazing thing, you don't want to, you know, throw a turd up on the wall. You know, you're like, it pushes you to work harder, I think, because, yeah. And not in a, like a competitive cutthroat way, but just in a iron sharpens iron kind of way.
Yeah. Do you feel that it's changed your thoughts on perfectionism then? If you're going from the idea of having complete control over your projects and making it exactly the way that you want it to be, or completely perfect in your eyes, do you think this frantic nature and this team nature has kind of pushed you more towards, well, it's 90% done, I'm happy, the client's going to be happy, we'll ship it?
Sure.
Or is it still very much like, I need to make sure this is perfect for my own sake as well?
I think that one of the nice things about working in an agency is that you already come in with most clients, at least in my experience, you're coming in to a system that's already there. Whereas it's not as much, I have to build something from the ground up. And so you have a lot of assets and pieces that you can, like, for example, I was working on an email campaign this week and I had a lot of outstanding photography, a whole library of stuff. The fonts were already chosen. All of those pieces were already assembled for me. And so I didn't have to use a lot of brain power thinking, oh geez, what typeface am I going to choose and what colors and all these things, because these pieces were already built up for me. So I think in some ways working in an agency, it's easier to achieve a better product because you are able to take advantage of a lot more resources that aren't there if you're just on your own or maybe just working in-house somewhere.
That's really good to hear, because it means that it gives you that breathing room, doesn't it? It gives you the breathing room between going at 100 miles an hour and having to make everything from scratch to be able to turn around and go, okay, well, you want this thing done? We open the client folder. Here are the assets. And it's like a repeat job. Does it ever feel like, obviously you said it was an advertising campaign with photography. Was that what you just, the project you just said?
Yes.
Yeah. So when it came to that type of project often has repeat sections or repeat bits in it. Does it kind of give you a bit more freedom then to kind of explore more when you are allowed to, and then you do kind of more repeated, not mundane work, but things you've done regularly?
So I would say that maybe the format is kind of, what's the word? Not cookie cutter, but there's a template in the case of like an email campaign.
Yeah.
But there's still a lot of room for you to kind of flex your creative muscles. In the case of this, we would produce three different examples for the client, and then they choose the one that they feel best about. So it's not as, you know, like, oh, I'm just swapping out an image and pulling off last year's assets, for example. You have that to look at as a reference point, but there's still a lot of room to put your own spin and flair on things.
That's good, because otherwise you end up, it's good working within limitation. It's something that I've kind of realized over the last year, is that there's nothing wrong with having a limitation there, because ultimately that is what keeps you on track. That is what a brief is for. It keeps you on track, it keeps you focused, rather than just kind of disappearing off into the ether.
Yes, there's some, I want to say maybe it's Paul Rand or Saul Bass, some famous graphic designer, but they had said, give me the freedom of a tight brief. Yeah. And I absolutely believe in that. The worst thing that can happen in a lot of cases is when, your client, and this doesn't matter if it's freelancing or agency stuff, it's when they're just like, well, you know, surprise me, you know, and it's just some sort of like, with what?
I mean, maybe you will get a turd on the wall.
Yeah. It's much easier to, for me at least, to be creative and consistently good within a certain amount of constraints.
Mm. And I'd agree with that. I think that a lot of people feel that when a client comes to them and says, I'd like you to put your own creative spin on it and give you full rein, that's actually not a good thing typically.
Yeah, I'd really rather not.
Yeah, that typically means that they either don't know how to articulate what they're after, they don't trust your kind of process, and they just want to see what you create, like, out of the blue. And that you probably haven't asked them enough questions. Because if you're not asking all the questions to get the information out, you typically don't end up with a brief that is so open-ended. Like, I can't imagine in the last year that I've had a brief that open. Because I'm always like, well, why do you want this? Or what's the purpose? What are you going to do with this? You can't do just open-ended creative. It doesn't work in business.
Yeah, and I think that for me, over the past year, I put a lot of focus on sharing my process through case studies.
Yeah.
And I think taking the time to write that out, it really actually helped me refine that process, because then I was able to use that model to teach and educate future clients, would say, like, this is what I did for these folks. And this was kind of the flow and how this work goes. Because for people outside of the design community, they really don't understand, like, exactly how a thing goes from A to B. You know, they just assume that, you know, we lock ourselves up in a room, we light up a joint, and
I mean, do you not?
A logo just gets cranked out or whatever. And that's not how it goes. And so for me, helping to one, define the process from a goal-oriented problem-solving perspective, and also for prospective clients, minimizing the risk in their mind that I'm not just some, you know, cruddy kid who's going to crank something out. I want to understand your business and your challenges and help you solve those problems.
You want to be a team player.
Exactly.
And that's ultimately what I think this comes back to. Whether you're working in an agency or you are kid with laptop in a coffee shop, it doesn't matter, because you need to be able to communicate. And I this is something I spoke to Arun about, was that he said he was in university still with an amazing portfolio, but what got him a job was his personality and the fact he fitted the culture. Do you find that maybe if you're going for an agency job, that your portfolio isn't everything? Has it always been, I assume it's not been the only thing that's got you a job?
I mean, I think part of it is, you know, your work is more fun when you get to work with nice people, people that you like to work with. So yeah, I definitely think personality and attitude goes a long way. You know, you can be the most talented person in the world, but if you're kind of an egotistical jerk, nobody's going to want to work with you. And particularly in design, where so much of what you do is a collaborative process. I mean, even when you're one-on-one with a client, it should be, to me, a partnership. And very team driven. And I think the projects that I've been a part of that have produced the best results, at their very core, were very collaborative.
And you said that one of the things that kind of has stuck in my mind that you said at the start was that you're self-taught largely. And I know that when I was applying for agency jobs and things like that a couple of years ago, that if I don't know how much, what the system you guys had and did over there, but whenever I'd apply for a job that was purely an online application, the job would always be like, do you have a degree in design? And I know that, and I learned very quickly that if I ticked no, which was the truth, my application would go straight in the bin. And this is something that I get asked about quite a lot is, well, I don't have a degree in design. They're a pretty good designer, but they're not sure whether to go freelance or get into an agency position. And my first thought is, well, if I had this much trouble even getting an interview, what was it like for you? Was the degree important at all? Did anybody ask, or was it more a case of, well, here's my portfolio, let's have a chat about this and see what we can do?
For me, in my experience, I've found that the degree is less important. I mean, you know, again, my degree is in English, not in design. And I think there is something to be said for having a degree. You know, there's something to be said for, you know, working for something for 3, 4, however many years and doing that. But like my art director, for example, he's never been to college or university, and he's produced outstanding work. And I think at the end of the day, for a lot of those, at least in the agency environment, that's what they're looking at. They're interested in your portfolio. They want to know how your mind works. I think that that is almost more important, like how you can respond to a challenge and how you can problem solve. And also, like you were saying, I think a lot of it comes down to, like, do you fit the culture of this agency? You know, like, do you seem like a person that we're going to work with, and are you going to fit into this mold?
Yeah, the mold fitting is really interesting, because the idea that you need a piece of paper to show your skill and your personality and your adequacy for the job, if that's even a word, how adequate you are for the job, is, it feels so backwards. It feels so twisted, especially for a creative service or a creative title. If you were to go into medicine or something that is even engineering, something that's more practical and fact-based, I think it's appropriate. But it's like going, if you don't have a degree in design, it feels, obviously they use the degree in design to say, well, you have some basic skills. And if you can get past that hurdle of, well, we can see you have basic skills, you can do kind of what you've just done, Austin, which is you go in, you be personable, you be egregious, you be a decent human being with a good portfolio, and that will open doors for you. But I always feel like there are so many good designers out there who are just want to get into the industry and want to be in an agency team environment, and they'll just maybe never be able to because the door is just shut before they can even knock on it.
Sure. I mean, I think part of that is, I'm not sure that you'd want to work, or at least I don't think that I would want to, and this is coming from a person with a degree, I don't think I would want to work for an organization that puts so much emphasis on some sort of formal training. I mean, I think, again, that just comes down to a culture, and I'm sure there are a lot of places that have that kind of like buttoned up approach to things. But for me, good work and good ideas can come from a lot of places and a lot of different people with different backgrounds. You said an interesting thing, you know, kind of comparing our profession with, you know, say a doctor or a lawyer or something. I think part of, you know, as designers, what we're up against is the nature of our field is so fluid because of the drive of technology and the rapid change that we see. I mean, for example, you know, the iPhone just came out a little over 10 years ago, and that completely changed the approach to web design. It launched in a whole new area of design in terms of mobile design, apps, and et cetera. It impacted the way logos are designed because suddenly everything has to fit in a little square, you know, icon. And I think that, sure, are there changes and forces that go on in other industries? Yes. But I think ours especially is so technology driven and so impacted by that, you know, your formal training might go out the window in 5-10 years, and it might be you're confronted with new challenges all the time.
That's actually the point I was about to raise up, which is that the way technology moves and this innovation very quickly outdates your education potentially. So if you were an art director looking to hire someone, it sounds to me like you would be better off looking for people who are flexible, adaptable, people who can grow as a system changes. Because I hadn't even considered the fact that the iPhone had actually created not just an innovation in technology standpoint, but across the entire board for digital design, it created effectively three new areas: mobile web, app and icon design, and then also influenced UI and UX, because those systems and those formats were just completely brand new. So yeah, that's probably another reason why looking at purely a degree or say a formal training or qualification is a sign that a company maybe doesn't have their long-term interests at heart. They're just looking for a pixel pusher for the time being.
Exactly. Or I would just question their priorities. I would say,
yeah,
why do you put so much weight on this? I think that, you know, again, I'm sure I work with a lot of peers who did go to design school. And I do think there is a lot, you know, I'm not bashing on going to design school. I think that is a great thing. I think you, in a lot of ways, you build a huge network from that I didn't have. You know, like when I showed up, even on my local scene, everybody's like, who's this guy? You know, because he didn't go to school with us. So, you know, I definitely encourage people to do that if that's what you want to do. I'm just saying that don't get wrapped up in feeling like you can't build a strong design career without this formal training, because there are agencies and opportunities that will look beyond that.
There are other options out there that can actually fuel you. I mean, you said at the start of the show, it's one of the sponsors that I have on the show is Skillshare. And now it's not a formal education, but the people who provide that content is professional content. It's education level content. It could be seen in a curriculum at a university. But you do raise a good point, which is the network thing. And it's something that I continuously, my girlfriend is in her last year at university at the moment. And this is what I tell anyone who's in a university at the moment or thinking about going to design for a university. If you don't leave with a network and a skill set that is competent, but mostly the network, because you can learn the skills, if you don't come out as a better person with a good network, you may as well not have gone.
Yes. I would totally agree with that. Getting hired at Cornette, honestly, was because I'd interviewed with them a few months back and didn't hear anything back. But then towards December, I posted something on my LinkedIn account and their creative officer reached out to me again and said, like, hey, we've got this position opened up, and just invited me, you know, because he'd already spoken to me and he knew what I could do and followed up with me. And had I not posted that thing on LinkedIn, had I not built those connections and spent a lot of time and energy doing that, I wouldn't be working there today. And so I definitely think that there's a lot to be said for building your network, whether it's through social networks like Instagram, Dribbble, what have you, or even just in your local design community. One of the nice things that we have here in my hometown is called Shift, which is a local design meetup. And they host events every month or so. And it's usually at some kind of like cool, swanky, design conscious place, like a fancy bar or restaurant or something like that. But it's just a cool opportunity to meet other people, hear about what they're doing, and just make connections that you might not have otherwise. And I would wager that there's probably a lot of those out there.
There are. I mean, in the UK alone, I can think of at least three or four different event groups, GLUG events being one of them, that do events all over the country. Now, it's usually major cities and things like that, but in-person networking events, even if they're not design related. I went to a business networking event at a local shared office space. I don't have an office there. I just work nearby. Like, I'm just here. I just turned up and I started talking to people and they were like, oh, so where are you in the building? And I was like, I'm not in the building, but this is who I am and this is what I do. And I want to learn more about the people around you. Because as you said, although the first opportunity you had, you felt maybe that, oh, maybe I didn't get the job or whatever, but that you were clearly in their minds because you'd gone down, you'd sat with them, you'd spoken to them, you'd shown them that you were a good person and that you'd be a good fit for the company. And although the first time wasn't right, clearly someone was thinking about you. So it does make a difference to go and talk to people in person.
Yeah, absolutely. And the more work that I've put out, like I'll say this to like young designers, and I think maybe this just applies to maybe life in general. My future father-in-law said this, your 20s suck. But if you can get through that time, I'm 29, I'm about to turn 30. Suddenly, assuming you're working hard and you're being diligent and persistent, something suddenly will turn. And it's not what's happened for me in the past year. It stopped being me reaching out for like a job and trying to get it. Those jobs are now contacting me and asking me if I'm interested. And I think so much of that has come down to, frankly, being obsessive about building my portfolio, both on Instagram, my website, and just being really locked into studying my craft and also sharing that process that I talked about before. But yeah, so much of it again has come down to building that network. You keep putting things out and growing that group, and people talk to each other, and you suddenly will find yourself being discovered.
You heard it first, guys. Like, get through your 20s. Lock yourself in a room.
just wait it out.
No, but you're so right. The people think everything is going to happen tomorrow. And it doesn't.
No.
What does matter about tomorrow is that you put 100% effort that you can into it. Because that adds up. So by the
time... Sure. I mean, you know, like, if you're doing... For me, I was finding myself doing kind of jobs for mom and pop shops. And sometimes I think as a designer, you might be faced with the temptation. You just want to get things done. And you might find yourself in a situation where I can just half-ass this because they'll think it looks good and I'll be done. But ultimately, you're really doing yourself a disservice because one, whatever comes out of that, you're not going to be able to show it off in a portfolio in the long run. When it goes out in the world, people aren't going to talk about it and want to know who did it. And you're really blowing an opportunity. You don't just wake up one day and suddenly you're working for, you know, Toyota or Nike or whoever. But by consistently doing good work and growing, and again, I'm a big advocate of being obsessive. I think that you really have to be that for a while till you can break through. And being honest with yourself, I mean, I would stare at things I'd done. If I go back and look, even maybe 2-3 years ago, I'm like, wow, what a piece of crap. But if you can, you know, really look at things and compare yourself to somebody you admire. I mean, you know, I did that. I would look at stuff you did and like, why does my stuff not look like Connor's? Or, you know, why does my stuff not look like Nick Slater's? And study those things and practice that and until you get to where you need to be.
And there's a lot to be said about doing that day in, day out. Now, obsessive is an interesting word that you used. And I know how you're using it in terms of it's a good thing to go out and learn as much as possible. And I think a lot of people turn the word obsessive up in their brain and go, well, I have to be a workaholic. I need to be up at 5 a.m. working on this. I need to go to my day job. I need to come back. And you burn out. And it seems like you found a fairly healthy balance of work life, outside kind of freelancing stuff and learning on the process. Do you feel that that's taken a long time to achieve, or have you just been able to kind of like slip into that routine quite easily?
Well, I think maybe in some ways it goes back to what we were talking about before about the fact that I don't necessarily lock in on just one area. I get the opportunity to work on a bunch of different things. Mm. And I think that is one major thing that helps prevent burnout is yeah. I'm not always doing the same thing over and over and over again. So taking the opportunity to... nurture those sorts of different areas and explore new things will go a long way. I would also say that, pro tip, go outside and like don't design sometimes. A lot of the things that I've, for example, I was going out to the parking garage downtown when I was leaving work the other day, and I looked across the street and there was this really cool symbol that I noticed. I'd never seen it before, even though I've parked in that garage many times. It was in the glass window of this church. And I just took a picture of it. I was like, you know what? I'm going to make that into a mark later because that's a cool symbol. And so for me, I enjoy finding like little treasures like that and then digitizing them in some way. I think that's a lot of fun. You know, I think getting beyond just locking yourself down to a particular routine or a desk or whatever, moving around, exploring new things will go a long way towards avoiding burnout.
Yeah, 100%. It's interesting that you've taken that approach to it. So you're still working within design. So you are still going, finding these symbols, spotting this interesting thing out in the world and making something from it that still fits within your kind of career path and your niche and what you do, but it's something that is one step away from your day job or your typical work office environment. By giving yourself that freedom, you're able to kind of go, okay, well, I made something cool today. And even if I'm not going to share it or show it with anyone, I made something for me. And that definitely, as you say, that really does help not cure burnout, but it helps to be preventative towards it, because you've picked a different pathway.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, I don't share everything that I make. But what I do believe in is consistently make stuff. And it doesn't have to even be like, you know, I do logo designs, but it doesn't always have to be that. Find a way to consistently be creative will help you, because I think a lot of people get trapped into this mentality of, I have to make a masterpiece every time. And I think nothing will cripple you more as a creator as than trying to aspire to this, oh, I have to make this perfect thing every time. Just try to make something decent. And if you do that consistently enough, a masterpiece will fall out of you every now and then. And, you know, just, I think I was listening to Lauren Hom on the Dribble podcast the other day, and she brought this up. She was saying that, like, rather than, you know, trying to post one beautiful thing a month, just try to do like two decent things a week. And you'll see that you're creating better work in the long run.
You've got to make 1,000 mistakes to make one masterpiece. It's some,
yes.
There is a saying that goes around something similar to that, where you need to, you're going to make 10,000 mistakes before you do it once, or something like that. And that process is what I think a lot of people are very anxious about and very driven by self-doubt in terms of. One of the things I'm struggling with at the moment is overthinking content and overthinking sharing things. And that self-doubt of, well, this isn't good enough, or that isn't good enough, when in reality, what I should be doing and what you've just said is make something that is half decent, that you are proud of what you've made. And it may not be a masterpiece, but there are many famous painters and many famous designers out there in the world who may look back at their lifetime of work and go, oh, well, there's maybe five things that I think are incredible out of the thousands they've made.
Sure. And I also think that, you know, sometimes when I share things, it's more to get feedback or spark a discussion. And it's not just like, look at me, look at the thing I made. You know, I think the last post that I did, I was working on these different flag marks, and I genuinely like couldn't decide which one I liked. And so I just put three up there and I said, guys, what do you think? You know, like give me some feedback. Mm-hmm. And it gives you an opportunity to engage with your community a little bit, and people will respond to you. I mean, and I think that again, that goes to a long ways towards preventing burnout too, because sometimes it's easy to feel like you're just alone and throwing things off into the ether and they just go into the void. And this doing that will remind you that there's a community that you're a part of and surrounds you, and it helps you see that you're part of something bigger than yourself.
Yeah, definitely. And the way that you can reach out to those people will help you identify as well where maybe you need to direct yourself, or even not in a kind of an obsessive chasing the numbers kind of way, but you are open to criticism and feedback that will ultimately help you become better. Which means that instead of making two decent things a month, maybe you'll make two masterpieces eventually.
Sure. That's exactly right. And, you know, you'll share techniques with each other too, and tips and tricks and things. I'm, you know, to all the people who are stressing about, you know, oh, I don't have a design degree, I'm still learning so much stuff through Skillshare. Like a few months ago, I was watching Aaron Draplin's course on Skillshare, which is, he has several on there and they're all fantastic, but he brought up a tool that I'd never heard of from, I think it's actually a UK based company called Astute Graphics.
Yeah. It's one of their plugins, right?
Yeah. And it completely like changed my work. Like it blew my mind, and it's such a simple thing, But suddenly, lining up your circles and tangents becomes so much easier. And it's like, how did this exist all this time? And no one told me about this. So, I think that, if you just stay hungry for knowledge and stay hungry for growth, and good things will happen for you.
There you go, guys. You heard it first. Focus, learn, keep pushing. And Austin will be there to give you good things. No, but seriously, you're right in that over time, it's the idea of the compound effect. And so many people have talked about this. I think Tony Robbins is one who pushes this a lot, and big business people push this all the time, which is the idea that if you do something small every day, or you try something every day towards your goal, it will eventually compound to the point at which people start coming to you for jobs. You start getting asked about things instead of having to seek it out. You reach a level you never thought you would achieve, and it just skyrockets. And although I don't feel like I'm there yet, and I'm sure that from what you've said that you're still on that journey, it's nothing wrong with continuing that. There's no point in waking up every day and going, oh, well, I've not achieved anything. You've got to think in this as like a long-term race. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Absolutely. And look for opportunities to grow and evolve, and don't be scared. I think, it's easy to slip into this trap of being scared to ask for help. Right now I'm thinking there's a guy that sits next to me at work, and I've looked over and he's doing amazing things with Procreate, which I don't know much about. And I'm embarrassed to go over and say, I know nothing about this. Help me learn it. But maybe Monday I will, because I it's something I want to discover and get better at. And he clearly has figured it out. And so don't be afraid. And I know that if I go to him, his name's Ken, he'll say, oh, absolutely, I'd be happy to help you out. So don't be afraid to reach out for help, because it's a lot easier to grow that way rather than trying to go it alone and bumble along and probably take a lot longer or maybe never discover it.
You can only, it's the point of putting brains together, isn't it? The idea of being part of a team or a community, and that you can bounce ideas off each other, but you can also go to someone who knows something. It's like, if you imagine you were in a medieval village, it's like you being a fisherman and going to a blacksmith and being like, hey, can you show me, or can you help me? They'll be like, yeah, hell yeah. Because now I don't have to do as much work, or someone can help me, or we can do this together.
That's right.
You end up building a stronger bond with other people, but you also benefit from that too. But not only asking for help is beneficial to you, but then they teach it. Someone else will teach you, and they'll learn as well, because they'll relearn what they already know.
Sure. And
ways.
It goes both ways, because there will be times where I might know something that he doesn't, and, to your point, I think with creative work, it does kind of take a village to help really build a great product.
Yeah, I'm not condoning building mud huts, though, and thatched roofs and trying to be a design agency. You might struggle without electricity, guys, but
we maybe just share an office.
There's one office and everyone else just lives in a mud hut. Yeah, that would be fabulous. Someone built that. And going back to the idea of community, the last thing that I'd love to kind of spend a few minutes talking about with you today is the Logo Hunt contest. Now, we've been doing the Logo Hunt contest, me and Jonathan at Logo Inspirations, for the last couple of years. And time again, this man, Austin, has just been putting out work and entries for this that have been always like very much top of my list. And particularly ones like the St. Leo's School. I'm looking at it on my screen right now. And it's not just the work that you put out with that, but it's also the interaction, the community side of it, I think, that I would never have found your work without it. I don't think it was definitely the contest that put us in touch. And that type of event, whether that is a contest or community online or a business networking event, do you think that, not specifically trying to toot my own horn, but the type of contests and community-based stuff like that online, do you think that helps as much as business stuff in person?
For sure. I mean, for me, the first logo hunt challenge that you guys did, when I put something out into that, and you know, you see all this amazing work that's coming in from very talented people, and it can be kind of intimidating. But when I saw that my work was good enough to, you know, stand among, you know, the best of those, that was the first time I think in my design career, I was like, you know, like I can be a big player in this if I want to be, you know, I can hold my own with the best of them. And so that will give you a lot of confidence, participating in those, but it'll also help you see how other people approach those sorts of situations and give you ideas for, you know, future things. I can't wait for the next logo hunt challenge, because it's so much fun. And, I throughout the year, I'll make mental notes. I've gotten a habit of like, remember that place. I'm coming back to you.
You hear it first here, guys. Like, Austin is already ahead of you. Like, catch up.
Oh yeah. I'm kidding. I'm not sandbagging with like 30 designs or anything, but I am making notes in my head that like, I'm coming back for that sign, or I'm coming back for, you know, that whatever. But there's other things like that too. Like, I think the website, Daily Logo Challenge, for me, where a lot of people might not know by looking at the stuff that I post, most of the stuff that you're seeing isn't client work. It's just a mark I wanted to make because I wanted to make it, and that's it. And through doing that, you know, I think early on, a thing I struggled was, well, how do I get more work if I don't have anything to work on? And it never occurred to me, oh, just make something up. It took me a long time to get over that mental hurdle, but that I think is so huge. And there's so many resources out there where you can get daily prompts for things. And it just goes back to being consistently creative. Not all the things that you make in those are going to be great because it's like a daily challenge and you're only spending maybe a couple hours on it. But through doing that, it will help you to explore new techniques that maybe you wouldn't have done before. And again, it ties you into a community, like with the daily logo challenge and also with Logo Hunt. You know, a lot of these people are hashtagging things so that you get part wrapped up into this group. And so other people that maybe didn't discover your work, it really amplifies your voice at that point. Because, you know, frankly, a lot of the leaps that I've seen in my very modest Instagram account have come from participating in those sorts of events.
And it's the way you phrase that, it feels like not only is the community side of it really good, obviously for getting that reach, for connecting with people you may never have done otherwise, but secondly, you've taken on a personal challenge, which is one of the best ways to develop, because if you can't do a self-initiated project, where's your focus in general? Because the second someone's going to hand you a brief, you're probably not going to know how to handle it. And you're either going to carve it out your own way and not appeal to them, or it's just kind of fall flat kind of on its face. But the third point on that is that it's the networking side as well, and that you've elevated yourself and worked within a limitation. And it kind of
absolutely, yeah.
And that kind of comes right into the three points that we've said today. It's like networking, community, reaching out to other people, and setting yourself limitations, and or not, maybe not setting yourself, but working within a tight brief to find the most freedom.
Yeah, I know that Chris Doe's head is probably going to explode when I say this because I've heard him criticize it before.
I'll clip it, but send it to him.
Yeah, but like 99 Designs, for example, I'll get on that and I'll submit things to that. I've never won, not once, one of those contests. But that's not why I do it. I do it because it comes with a built-in brief. Yeah. And so rather than thinking, oh, geez, what mark do I want to make today? I just use that as a jumping off platform. And if I accidentally win a couple hundred bucks from doing that, cool. But I really do it just because I want something to work on. And as you, it'll help you flesh out a portfolio so that eventually you're not just doing stuff for fun. You know, people are calling you up and saying, hey, I really like the work you've done and would love you to work on our project now. So, yeah.
I've never heard that type of approach before. It's something that I've not even considered, is that I kind of have a bit of a vendetta towards things like Fiverr and 99designs and Upwork, because of their structure and because of the way that people feel that's the only way they can make a professional career. But the way you're interpreting that is probably the best and most effective way, an effective use of your personal time in terms of fleshing out a portfolio and practicing and demonstrating your skill when you don't have client work. Because 99designs is a contest site. You're never going to make, or you're very unlikely to make a full-time career from a contest. But doing what you've done, which is work within a limitation to, rather than if you struggle maybe to come up with your own briefs, there's thousands of them on that website that you could work with. And if, as you say, if you're lucky enough to win, which unfortunately in those contest sites is, it's luck most of the time.
Yeah.
Then that's even better. But your focus is not on, well, this is how I'm going to have to make money.
Oh no. Don't go to 99designs trying to pay your rent. that is a recipe for disaster because, and I'm not just saying this because, you know, I've lost all the contests that I've been a part of. The clients that request these logos generally don't have great taste. And it's not like you really have the opportunity to like present the logo. You're just going to throw it at them and upload it. So, you know, you're not able to walk them through explanations of why you made your decisions and things like that. But at the same time, I mean, for me, you know, it's hard to come up with a new idea all the time of something I might like to make. And it's just a fun way to keep myself busy if I don't have a ton of client work going on and I can have fun with it. I don't have to like feel immense pressure to get it perfect. I can just do my best.
And doing your best ultimately is what's going to matter because that's how you get through your 20s. Build up this compound effect and then things click and all the stuff comes to you. We've done it. We've full looped the podcast. Hallelujah. Awesome. Woo! So thank you very much, Austin, for joining me today on this episode of The Fowler Hour. Where can people find you online?
Lots of places. So my Instagram and I think Dribbble as well. You can find me by looking up AX and then my last name, McKinney. It's McKinney. That's my Instagram handle and Dribbble as well. I'm also, you can connect with me through LinkedIn. I'm on there a lot. And then also my website, which is just axmckinney.com.
Awesome. Thank you, Austin, for joining me today. All those links are going to be down in the description as always, guys. And we'll see you on the next episode. Bye.